Welcome to TorpCast, episode 8. Forwardcast. Frankly, this is the first cast that has any intellectual merit. I fancy it as much as I do. Our subject, Jasper Ford, is author of the Thursday Next Juris Fiction series and Jack Spratt Nursery Crime series of books. If you're confused now, stick around with us so you can become thoroughly and extremely befuddled. I'd like to introduce you to Jasper Ford, author extraordinaire and true gentleman. But since casting failed to contact our esteemed and visionary subject, you'll have to settle for my good friend and executive producer in charge of belly button lint and foot odor, Jim Caswell.
And it's part of my community service agreement to introduce Doug Zeitlin, former executive producer of Lola Vavoom's team of shoe dyeing specialists, recently let go due to the sniffing incident. With him is special correspondent Ken Halloran, juris fiction agent assigned to the comedy of manners subgenre. Welcome, gentlemen.
I take it you use that term loosely. Today, we will be discussing Jasper Ford, Thursday Next, and Jack Spratt.
Doug, why don't you tell the audience how we, as a group, were introduced to the works of Jasper Ford?
At the time I found Jasper Ford, I was working in Barnes & Noble. During one of my many busy days, there was a particular customer who I saw reading The Air Affair in our cafe. She proceeded to read the entire novel during my shift at Barnes & Noble and put it back. Sorry, Jasper.
Hopefully we've made up for it in the three copies that we've bought.
Yeah, three copies. I own two. I don't know how many you own.
Actually, I own two.
Okay, well, I own one, so...
I think my folks each own two.
Jasper, we made up for the one copy that she didn't buy.
So as I'm putting this book away, which she left sitting on the table, I just kind of read The Dusk Jacket. And The Dusk Jacket compares this to Monty Python, Harry Potter, Stephen Hawking, and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Well, just based on this very clever Dusk Jacket work, I had to pick up the book. So, the copy of the book that this girl had put down, I proceeded to purchase. I wish I could say that I was smart enough actually to catch every single joke in this book. However...
You're not.
He's a product of the American education system.
Yes, and being a product of the American education system, I turned to my good friend with a Catholic education to explain to me the jokes I had missed.
It wasn't the Catholic education, it was the daddy's an English teacher and a mom was a librarian.
Either way, when we want something smart explained to us, we go to Ken.
You're the one with a master's degree. Remember this. You loaned me your copy. I read it, thoroughly enjoyed it, bought my own. Later on, I was given a hardback copy to go along with it. And I thought it was great. And did we ever really give you a choice in the matter?
Actually, I wasn't brought on until Jasper Ford's second series. And it was when he wrote The Big Over Easy that Doug reeled me in.
Realizing that you're, one, A, a fan of the British comedy, and B, a murder mystery fan, I absolutely, to this day, still believe the absolute best formula murder mystery that I have ever read is The Big Over Easy.
So you said, as soon as you get the chance, read this, and loaned me your copy. I read it, loved it, proceeded to go on out and buy my own copy, because we do things like this. Weren't you paying attention 2 minutes ago?
Well, I think that that's a good point. When you are introduced to someone as talented as Jasper Ford, and a work of art as good as either The Air Affair or The Big Over Easy, really the only way you can tell the publishers that you want more is to purchase it yourself. I mean, this is what says, I like this enough that I put up my blood, my sweat, and my money for it, because I want more. I mean, in an unrelated topic, I think this is a paradigm that may change, say, the music industry. Download a song, if you like it, buy it. If you don't, delete it.
I think it would be a great way to actually find out what people really enjoy.
What, you don't want to just keep letting the suits make the decision?
We'll get back to that. Jasper and his viewpoints on the corporation. We'll get back to that. The three of us have enjoyed Jasper Ford's work so much that we actually took a road trip to Wisconsin just so that we'd have a chance to meet him, get our books autographed, and hear the guy talk for 2 hours. In fact, if I remember correctly, we got there 2 hours early just so we could beat the crowd.
We get good seats and find the place because we weren't entirely sure where we were going.
Mm-hmm. And believe me, when you're going to see Jasper Ford, there's going to be a crowd.
And there's nothing really new about us not knowing where we're going. You've listened to our show, right? But to actually talk about the man as opposed to our admiration for the man, we thought we'd give you just a little bit of history before we jumped into talking about the books. Jasper Ford's first career was in the movies. He was a cinematographer and focus puller.
A cinematographer is responsible for the picture you see on the movie screen. When you look at a movie picture, usually it's shot in a widescreen cinematic format. He's going to determine what you're seeing on the left side of the screen, what you're seeing on the right side of the screen, what your background is. essentially, if you were to take a still picture before the actor started going, he's the person that decides what the still picture looks like. Then the actors are put in the scene, and they're given their motivation by the director. They're given their marks. They're given their props. That's another aspect of it. But the picture that you're actually seeing that the actors are working their way through, that's determined by the cinematographer.
Essentially, he worked with the cameras. But the work that he did was actually on some fairly well-known
A-list movies.
He worked on Entrapment with Sean Connery, Mask of Zorro with Antonio Banderas.
All right, are you going to tell me you're going to say Entrapment and Mask of Zorro and not mention
Catherine Zeta-Jones?
This is true. You're right. I deserve a slap on the hand for that one. He worked on The Saint and on Goldeneye. He had a fairly successful career in movies. But while he enjoyed his work, he really wanted to write a book. And he did. He sat down and he wrote The Big Over Easy. He had this idea for a detective novel that revolved around nursery rhyme characters. And he loved the idea, wrote it, marketed it around. Nobody would touch it with a 10-foot pole. So he decided that if nobody likes this book, then maybe I should write a sequel to it, and maybe people will be interested in reading the sequel, and then therefore they'll want the first book. So he wrote The Fourth Bear.
With a little disappointment, Jasper was told that nursery crime series would be unpublishable. This did not deter an author of greatness, and he began on the Thursday Next series. Thursday Next revolves around an alternate Earth with a literary detective named Thursday Next. In this particular world, literature is taken very seriously to the point where it's given its own special operations branch in the British government, and they have to enforce things, laws regarding literature, forgery of manuscripts,
piracy.
Throughout the course of this novel, her uncle Mycroft develops a device that allows people to physically enter the world of the book. When people change the events in the world of the book changes. The particular plot of this book revolves around the manuscript of Jane Eyre being held hostage
by basically the bad guy going into the novel and kidnapping Jane Eyre. Jane Eyre, by the way, was written in the first-person narrative, so without the lead character, nothing.
He's threatening to execute Jane Eyre, which would, in effect, in the manuscript, would essentially kill off the character in every printed version of the book.
Yeah, the bad guy was smart enough to go into the original manuscript, therefore it would have a domino effect.
As opposed to when, you know, your or my copy's at home, it would just affect that one copy.
Jesper gives a lot of thought to a lot of subjects. The nature of how books are constructed, the internal workings of the book world, external workings of the real world.
The interface between the two.
As well as various other topics like the quantum mechanics of time travel.
His rules for time travel really are pretty bad. He's inconsistent, I think deliberately.
Yes, he's very deliberate about how inconsistent he is about time travel.
Well, all we could say is that time travel requires Nextian geometry, and as he's never explained what Nextian geometry is, he could be very consistent within Nextian geometry, which has nothing to do with our version of physics or geometry.
In other words, he is very, very skilled at winging it.
So these books are not for the faint at heart, and my definition of faint at heart would be people who can't really handle time travel paradoxes or
alternate history, literature.
Basically, if you're one of those reality show fans who can't handle anything above and beyond America's Got Talent, yeah, don't try this at home.
Didn't that show used to be called Gong Show?
Yes, it did.
One of my favorite concepts that are introduced in the Thursday Next series is the Office of Jurisfiction. These are the detectives within the book world. So if you're existing inside the book world, they police it. The essence, then, of the Thursday Next novels is Thursday's existence in her real world, which is alternate to ours, Thursday's existence within the books themselves, and then her role in law enforcement.
And there's also the role that her family plays that adds other background stories.
Without being redundant, there's much comic hilarity that happens within all of this between what's happening in all the different worlds and all the different laws and what's different between Thursday's real world and our real world. Just to give you an example of the differences in the two worlds, there is reality programming in Thursday Next's real world. They have shows like Kidney Swap and Celebrity Kidney Swap, which are exactly what they sound like. They are several different families who are in need of a kidney.
renal failure patients on TV.
That's exactly what it is. They're renal failure patients who are vying on a reality television show to get somebody's good kidney.
And then there's other shows like Name That Fruit. So it's not that uncommon for a Thursday Next book to have five or six ongoing plot lines all at the same time.
As we said earlier, I introduced the concept of the nursery crime novels to Jim. Therefore, I'd like Jim to tell you a little bit about the nursery crime novels.
The first and second books of the nursery crime trilogy deal with Detective Jack Spratt of the nursery crime division in Reading, England.
You look at it, and it looks like reading. That's just one of the sight gags throughout the book.
His partner is Sergeant Mary Mary.
Who, given her name, is not actually very contrary.
And their job is to investigate crimes that are either perpetrated or committed against the nursery crime characters that live within their community. They fully understand that they are nursery rhyme characters. It's just
something of second-class citizens, actually.
And they need to be policed just like everybody else does.
In the first book, it starts pretty much with a tragic accident. Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall.
Humpty Dumpty was murdered.
Jack Spratt and Mary Mary are assigned to investigate the case. The second book, The Fourth Bear, deals with another very well-known fairy tale.
And how it flies in the face of thermodynamics.
Outside of the plot device of these stories, where Jack Spratt is a detective investigating crimes involving nursery rhyme characters, there are many subtopics talking about things like the second-class nature of citizens. And yes, in the books themselves, these citizens are nursery rhyme characters, but it parallels things that happen in real life. To put it plainly, they're segregated against. There are certain areas that they're allowed to live in. There are certain jobs that they're allowed to hold. I mean, they are second-class citizens.
Bears with the capability of talking and wearing clothing are only allowed to live within a certain forest area and one ghetto.
They are not all as heavy as dealing with segregation and discrimination. Some of them deal with the nature of thermal dynamics. Some of them deal with the nature of porridge.
Exploding cucumbers.
Speaking of exploding cucumbers, one of the themes that occurs in both sets of series is the idea that big corporation is bad. The big corporation in the nursery crime series is developing exploding cucumbers and trying to find new and interesting ways to make money and make war. The same general principle occurs in the Thursday Next series.
As with nursery rhymes themselves, a lot of Jasper's work is allegorical. He has made great pains to separate his worlds from our world. In doing so, he can take pot shots at just about anybody he wants because they're fictional characters, when clearly these fictional characters are based on actual corporations or actual political figures. I don't remember who Humpty Dumpty represents, but as I recall it, Humpty Dumpty was a political figure of the day where this rhyme comes from, and the rhyme itself is an allegorical tale of the political leaders back then.
He uses a pre-existing allegorical genre to tell more allegory.
Now, just because he uses nursery rhymes as a backdrop for one of his series of books does not mean that these are stories for children or written at a children's level. These are books that are written for adults. They're written for thinking adults.
I would like to add to that, that despite the fact these books are made for thinking adults, they're certainly reader-friendly. You don't have to be a well-educated college professor to understand what's going on in these books. As we've stated earlier, I knew reading The Air Affair. I was missing some of the jokes. Not all of them, but I know simply having not read Jane Eyre, I didn't get everything that was going on. That did not make the book any less pleasurable or enjoyable to me. And I'm sure in both series that I've missed stuff. That doesn't mean that I like them any less. It just means that for people who are more educated or more intelligent than me, that being, you know, the other 99% of the population, they'll get something more out of the books.
The more you know, the more you'll get out of them.
They're books for thinkers, but you don't have to be overeducated to enjoy them.
You don't have to have a PhD in literature to enjoy them, but you may enjoy them more if you do.
When I think of all the people that I've encouraged to read The Air Affair, I think only one of them has actually read Jane Eyre.
I think that the books run the risk of being insulting to people who are literature elitists.
Thank God. So sorry.
No, I agree with you. The books are written at a level where an intellectual literature elitist could understand them, but it's actually kind of poking fun at the fact that they're an elitist literature person.
If you read one of these books and you start becoming severely offended, yeah, you should be.
And again, also saying that they are adult novels, they're family-friendly novels. With the sole exception of Thursdays 1 through 4, which is something I'm not going to explain to you, you just have to read to understand it. There's no overtly violent characters, there's no massive bloodshed, there's nothing that's gross, there's no overt sex scenes, there's no adult language that you're going to have to white out any of the pages. They are truly family-friendly novels.
There are a few themes that I'm not sure I'd want anyone younger than 10 reading.
Beyond maybe the themes that you wouldn't want a 10-year-old to read, I don't think somebody younger than 10 would understand most of the books. I don't think they'd find them funny.
Basically, if these were movies, I could easily see them having a PG-13 rating. Probably one of the best reoccurring themes within the Jasper Ford books, though, is the fact that in his novels, one person can make a difference.
This is a common theme in science fiction, comic book, pop literature, that one person can make a difference, that Michael Knight in his car really can change humanity.
In this world where big corporations are running things and are responsible for so much, and the fact that one person can walk in and change the environment so drastically.
Just an example, and a credit to one of our friends across the pond. There's a particular gentleman right now in Scotland who is thumbing his nose at Donald Trump. Donald Trump has a huge piece of oceanfront land right now in Scotland that butts up against this farm, which is 20-plus acres. Not a huge farm, but the gentleman refuses to sell it to Donald Trump. He wants it to stay farmland, whereas Donald Trump wants to make it a luxury golf course. And as I understand it, the sale of this property is like the final piece that Trump is looking for. And it's gotten down to a name-calling match between Donald Trump and this farmer. And I have to say, I really hope you hold out. This particular twerp is right there with you, brother. I suspect, however, that big government, big business, they will find a way to squeeze you. But we're here for you.
I can appreciate a little guy being able to take on a big corporation, and even if he doesn't completely stop him, at least he's being a thorn in the guy's side. And it gives Donald Trump something other than Rosie O'Donnell to worry about for a little while. Not that I'm supporting Rosie O'Donnell in any way, shape, or form. She's just as bad as he is. Now, among the reoccurring themes, there are also some favorite features. Number one for me is the idea of retelling old favorites with new twists, which seems to be a trend that is resurfacing lately.
It's actually quite a fun little trend. I see that we're going to be discussing Wicked by Gregory Maguire, which was an absolutely fabulous retelling of the Oz story from the witch's point of view. It's a brilliant piece of political fiction in the likes of Aldous Huxley and George Orwell. It's absolutely brilliant storytelling set in The Wizard of Oz.
And likewise, another retelling of The Wizard of Oz is coming up on the Sci-Fi Channel in the form of Tin Man in December.
And despite the fact that it's on Sci-Fi Channel, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's pretty bad when, as big a twerps as we are, we don't look forward to new stuff coming from Sci-Fi Channel.
Yes, if you've been paying attention to the last twerpcast, we are talking about Flash Gordon. I know that bad publicity is better than no publicity at all, but Flash Gordon is bad. It's really, really bad.
And we will probably continue to talk about how really, really, really bad it is until it finally gets canceled. But we're talking about retelling of old favorites in a positive way.
Sorry.
Another good example of this is Frank Bedore's Looking Glass Wars series. It's a trilogy of books. The first book was The Looking Glass Wars. Second book is Seeing Red. And the third book is about to be written. And it's set within the world of Alice in Wonderland. The supposed backstory of it is that Frank met a man who knew the quote-unquote real story of Alice in Wonderland, and now Frank is conveying that story to other people. It's a new take on it, very well written, but again, it falls into this subgenre of retelling classic fantasy and fairy tales.
I'm told that the Alice in Wonderland books are second only in publication to the Bible. That fact amazes me. I love British nonsense humor, and I'm just not a fan of the Ellis books.
At some point, I do want you to sit down and read The Looking Glass Wars, though, to see what your opinion of those would be.
Retellings are not the only feature in this genre. BBC ran a 6-part series called Jekyll. This was not a new telling of the Jekyll story. This was a sequel telling. This is several generations later, saying that even though the book clearly states that Dr. Jekyll had no children, that Hyde had many illegitimate children, and this is telling the story of Hyde's illegitimate descendants.
One of the components in First Among Sequels is the fact that the now is diminishing, and therefore the appreciation of novels is going down, and viewership of reality shows is going up.
This is actually one of the cases where the alternate reality and the book reality actually coincide pretty well. The fact that in the year 2007, book sales continually drop unless you have a mega hit like Da Vinci Code, which is few and far between, whereas reality television ratings are going up and up and filling the airwaves.
We did spend a good deal of time talking about how we feel about reality programming in our fall cast. To recap, it stinks. The level that he takes reality programming to is a little bit over the top, but it does an excellent job of relaying the absurdity of it.
And a thinking person's disgust of reality television.
A thinking person's disgust with society in general's tendency to focus only on what's going on in front of me right now.
Now, I said it before, and I really do think that we owe a humongous debt of gratitude to J.K. Rowling for getting kids interested in books again.
And I completely agree with that, and I'm so thankful that J.K. Rowling is out there. However, I really feel that the Harry Potter series falls in the same category as Da Vinci Code. You've got a mega hit that everybody knows about and everybody wants to be a part of. It's become pop culture to read J.K. Rowling. So there are people who have literally read the 7 Harry Potter series who've never read another book.
But there are several authors out there who have been smart enough to jump on the bandwagon that she has created.
Or on her coattails.
And have written other fantasy novels that revolve around a teenage male protagonist trying to draw the readers who have finished reading the Harry Potter series. I don't have a problem with this because the people that you just described may actually pick up more novels because they see the link between the characters.
I really hope that that's the case. I think that reading is a pastime that's just disappearing. It's something that people are really going to miss when it's gone.
For what it's worth, even on the cover of Air Affair, they basically say if you like Harry Potter, you should like the Air Affair.
Attaching Harry Potter's name to your product in any way, shape, or form means that you're probably going to increase your sales on some level.
At the risk of giving a gag away from one of Jasper's books, Harry Potter makes a non-cameo in one of his books. It's actually quite funny.
Oh, it is absolutely hilarious. I listened to these books as opposed to reading them, because this way I get in 3 hours of reading time rather than 5 or 10 minutes here or there. It's a wonderful experience.
And that's what's wrong with America today. The way we live our lives, and I'm including myself in this, is between everything that needs to be done at home and all the time we have to spend at the office, people just don't take the time to read anymore. I can understand why you do it the way you do. You've got the hour and a half commute to work and then an hour and a half back from work.
And I would much rather sit and listen to a good book than listen to bad music, bad DJs, bad talk show hosts.
This is a good time to make a small segue here. Do you think that listening to a book on audio tape or CD diminishes the quality of the overall product that really is storytelling through book?
Most of the time, I feel as though it's really not that big of a difference. That you can get as much out of listening to a book on CD as you can sitting down and actually reading the book. And in most cases, you can do it more efficiently listening to it on CD, if you're willing to dedicate the attention to it. If you're doing 5 different things at the same time and trying to listen to a CD, you're not going to be able to give that CD the attention that a book deserves.
For what it's worth, oral storytelling is older than books.
I don't think that the story itself is lost in the audio telling. I actually use audiobooks to enhance my ability to read. I try and take an hour a day to actually read a book, but I still have 2 hours worth of commute time every day. I can use this 2 hours of commute time to put in additional reading, even though that I'm driving. And actually, this allows me to read 2 books at the same time. I will read the audiobook while I'm driving, and I will read the physical form while I'm at home. In some respects, the audiobook storytelling actually enhances the reading. I'm going to use Harry Potter as an example of this. Jim Dale is an absolute marvelous storyteller. He has received Grammys for his audio versions of the Harry Potter books. In addition, he's in the Guinness Book of World Records for the single most voices ever done on audiobook. Jim Dale brings his own rendition of storytelling into the book. My only worry about the interference of audiobooks in the storytelling process is what I call the internal voice. From having seen the movies, listened to the audiobooks, and reading the Harry Potter stories, I have one voice from Jim Dale, one voice from Daniel Radcliffe, and one from my own internal readings. Do things like audiobooks distract because now you have that other person's voice in your head?
The one thing about the audiobooks, though, that is lost, and it's not the storytelling per se, and it's not something that in the vast majority of cases you have to worry about, but in the specific case of the Jasper Ford books, he has enough fun with the book format that there are things that occur that are literally a part of the book reading experience that cannot possibly be conveyed by the audio storytelling.
The actual story itself is not directly compromised.
There are things that he does with the format just to enhance the enjoyment of physically reading a book.
You will miss out on the visual Easter eggs. Now, for the actual Easter eggs, you need the book in your hand and the Jasper Ford website, because there are additional Easter eggs.
Which is also another trend that I've been noticing, especially with Jasper Ford and Frank Bedore, who both got their starts in cinema. They go that extra mile. They don't just write the book, but they also develop websites with extra features, and they think beyond the book. Frank has teaser trailers for the books, and their work doesn't stop at the end. They take it a few extra steps as well.
It's called salesmanship in the 21st century.
Yes, but it's not something that you often see in the book world yet. I think it would be a very nice trend to see expanded upon.
All right. As for ratings, I will give Jasper Ford, in his entirety, 5 pens in the pocket protector. I have not read The Looking Glass Wars, but I'm looking forward to it immensely.
I think, again, in my conservative nature, I'm going to give Jasper Ford in its entirety 4.5 out of 5 pens in the pocket protector, just because I always hope that people can exceed my expectations. Moving on to Twerp News. As you've hopefully realized by now, Act 1 of Episode 3 of Star Trek Eras has finally hit the air! Both Eras and Twerpcast have been suffering from real-world syndrome, which means our 9-to-5 daily routines have been chewing up more and more time lately. We are hoping, though, to get things back on track with the rest of Episode 3 and at least 2 more episodes of Twerpcast before the end of the year. Star Trek NX-01 is still on target for a Christmastime release, but I'm on 4 has been pushed back to probably January or February. Lastly, Ken, Doug, and myself are all going to be attending WindyCon this year. That is Chicago's local science fiction convention, which is celebrating its 34th year this year. The convention meets at the Wyndham O'Hare Hotel in Rosemont, Illinois, from November 9th to the 11th. If you're interested in finding out more information, go to www.windycon.org, and hopefully we can see you there. We will be doing giveaways again this year, so if you spot us, definitely stop and say hi. All in all, we thank you for bearing with us and continue to stick with us as we work towards producing more and more enjoyable entertainment for you.
Well, thank you for once again listening to Twerpcast. As always, we encourage and expect your feedback. Please write Jim at twerponline.net.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
That's a chip up the nose, Ken.
Thank you.